Well, tonight we're going to talk about viruses, but not the kind that you think. In a moment, Dr. Wayne Dyer joins us. Excuses be gone. And Dr. Bruce Lipton, The Biology of Belief on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, two great guests for you tonight. Dr. Wayne Dyer, one of the most widely known, respected people in the field of self-empowerment. He is affectionately called the father of motivation by everyone who knows him. Despite his childhood spent in orphanages and foster homes, Dr. Dyer has overcome incredible obstacles to make his dreams come true. And today he spends much of his time showing others how to do the same. Here he is on Coast to Coast back again. Wayne, how are you?
I'm great, George. How are you?
I'm great. I'm going to tell you a great story in just a moment. You're going to love this. And Dr. Bruce Lipton, of course, is an internationally known, recognized authority in bridging science and spirit. He's a regular on Coast to Coast. Dr. Lipton began examining the principles of quantum physics and how they might be integrated into his understanding of the cell's information processing systems. Latest work is The Biology of Belief. We'll tell you about some of the other things that Bruce is working on. Here he is on Coast to Coast. Bruce, welcome back.
Oh, thank you so much for the honor again to speak with you and your audience. Thanks.
My pleasure. Wayne and Bruce, how did you two get together? This is a great story.
Well, this is Wayne speaking. I received a copy of Biology of Belief in the mail from someone who told me that they thought I would be interested in it. I only get about 1,000 of those a month. So it wasn't. But I just, for some reason, I picked it up and I started looking at it, and I noticed that it was, that he had published it himself. That it was filled with incredibly great information. I was writing a book about excuses. I wanted to lead off the book with the big excuses that we often use. It's my DNA. I can't help it. It's just, it's in my genes. You know, what do you expect from me? That kind of thing. And I was just going to skim his book, and I started reading it one night, and I read everything, and then I called Sounds True, this place that puts out some of his lectures. There was an 8-lecture series. I asked for that. I started outlining it. I called my publisher. I said, get a hold of this guy. I want his book published with Hay House. I want to put him on my public television special. I think the whole country needs to read this book. It touched me deeply and profoundly, and everyone I tell about it feels the same way. So that's how it happened.
And here now, you both are.
Yeah, now we're close friends, and we've appeared on stage together, and we do a lot of things together.
Well, that's great. Speaking of stage, this is my story, Wayne. A couple of weeks ago, I had to go to Detroit for two reasons. One, my father had just been released from the hospital, and we thought we were going to lose him, and he made an incredible recovery. And my mom was celebrating her 80th birthday, so we converged on Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And my sisters are there, and my children came up from St. Louis, so we're all there. Now, my folks have a small house. They're in the same house they've been in since 1958.
What street is it on? It's
in Dearborn Heights.
Oh, in Dearborn.
And
okay.
So we all went there, but I told the mom, Dad had just come back from the hospital, and I said, look, I'm going to a hotel room. There's no room here for me, and I just don't want to crowd the place because mm-hmm. my kids were there and everybody was there. So I'm in my room. We're getting ready for my mom's birthday, and I'm turning on the television set, and up you pop on a TV show. But I've got to tell you, you were just interviewing and mentioning Dan Carroll.
Oh, my goodness.
The little mm-hmm. boy at the time who was burned over all parts of his body.
80%.
And
right.
There he was playing the drums. And I've got to tell you, I was mesmerized. When
me too.
Just mesmerized by him.
He's in the Excuses Be Gone public television special, and he's, you know, when I talk about excuses and the things that people use to explain away why their life isn't working the way they want it to work, and then I have Dan come out and talk to them, and I ask the audience, then do you have any excuses? I mean, this is a man, a young boy who was only 2 years old. It happened in 1982. And he was burned over almost 80% of his body. And when they unwrapped him after all, he went up to the Shriner Hospital up in Boston. And finally, you know, they do this unwrapping, and they don't know how things are going to go. And as they unwrapped one arm, his hands fell off. And as they unwrapped the other arm, all of his fingers fell off, and except for one thumb. And then as they unwrapped his feet, his toes all fell off. And this was his legacy. And his face was completely burned beyond recognition. He's had grafts from the back of his back and so on his face. And this is one of the most positive, uplifting people. And he decided to become a musician. And I put him on my public television special and had him play the drums for people. You figure, how can somebody play drums without hands? But he's figured out a way to
he
do
has.
It.
I'm not going to give it away either.
No, it's really, he's just an incredible being. And people like that inspire me very, very much.
And Bruce, I mean, you have been on this program with us going back even in the Art Bell days, where you bridge science and spirituality with a lot of your work. Tell me a little bit about the biology of belief.
Well, basically, it was a whole transformation of my life. I was teaching in a medical school, teaching the conventional story about genetic control and how genes determine our traits and characters. And while I was teaching that, I was doing work on cloning stem cells, and that was back about 1967, so it was like 40-some years ago. And I was cloning these very important stem cells, which means that I was selecting one single cell, put it into a petri dish by itself, and then after it divides and divides and divides, it have thousands of cells in the dish, but they were all genetically identical, split them into three groups, put them into three different petri dishes with slightly different culture medium, and in one they form bone, and one they form muscle, and one they form fat cells. And to my surprise, of course, the question is, well, what controls the fate of the cells? And the first thing you start with, well, they were all genetically identical. So the only thing that was different was the environment. And all of a sudden, my career went off in this whole other tangent away from genes and recognizing how the environment, or most importantly, our perception of the environment, is what actually controls our behavior and our genetic activity. So the biggest transformation in the world was, in medical school, I was teaching that people were victims. You didn't pick your genes, and you can't change your genes, and apparently they control your fate, so you could always claim I'm a victim of these genes. And what the new research revealed was that it's all based on perception of the environment or perception of your reality, and that if you change your perception, you change your genetic activity. So the difference was like, oh, it was shocking because it was going from a belief of victimization to the fact that we could be masters. We just need to change our perceptions. And of course, this is what Wayne's work is primarily going into, is, okay, so what do we do to go in there and change those perceptions? Because once you do, you become a master of your life. And it's just the most amazing thing in the world, because it accounts for all those kinds of remarkable healing, spontaneous remissions, and things that people can do that almost seem magical and mystical.
Absolutely. And you look at this a lot, Wayne, in Excuses Be Gone, where you also make reference quite a bit to mind viruses. What are they?
Well, that was the other book that I got as I was starting to write this. And, you know, when these kind of things happen, I don't treat them as accidents. I have a dear friend who brought over a book. Her name's Tiffany, and she brought over this book, Virus of the Mind, by Richard Brody. And he was talking, it says the subtitle has something to do with it's the science of the meme. And I had heard the term meme in the past, and memetics and so on, but I really didn't quite have a full grasp on it. So I started another one of the books that I was going to skim, and then I began to go into it in depth. And what he speaks about is these, you know, that a virus is, you know, like a virus in the body. And a virus in a computer has three functions. You know, the first function of a virus is to duplicate itself, just keep duplicating. The second function of a virus is to infiltrate wherever it can, any kind of an opening that it has. And the third is to spread from one organism to another, from one computer to another, whatever it might be. And we can usually pinpoint what these viruses are. We can look under a microscope. Bruce is a cell biologist. I mean, he's looked at these, I'm sure. But the kind of things that he's talking about are ideas, which are memes that are placed into our heads when we are very, very young, and they are infiltrate, and they duplicate, and they spread from one person to another, and they become these cultural beliefs that we go around, and then most people go around with a whole host of these kinds of beliefs that I just call excuses. I can't help the way I am. It would take me a very long time to change. I'm too old. I'm too scared. You know, I'm too busy. I'm a woman. You know, I live in the wrong part of town. Whatever it might be. All of these kinds of things that we begin to hang on to as beliefs and perceptions, like Bruce is speaking about, and if we change, You know, I've often said when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. I mean, quantum physics has taught us that, that the way that we observe, what we observe is affected by the way that we observe it, the perceptions that we have about it. And so the magic of understanding these viruses and understanding what Bruce is talking about here in the biology of belief is that we can become so powerful as individuals that we can not only overcome like these genetic malformations that we may have in our life, but all of these ideas that were placed into us about what our limitations are, about what we can do, what we can't do. And I say at the display quote at the beginning of Excuses Be Gone is, don't believe everything you think, because most of the stuff that you think just simply doesn't hold up. And then I created this paradigm for changing it, and we put it to work. And I had a woman at a workshop I do here on Maui every October, this three-day workshop with myself and Ram Dass. And this woman had been binging and purging for 22 years. Every single day, she was close to death. She could barely walk into the room.
Oh,
she looked
God.
So bad. And in less than an hour, we were able to look at the perceptions and the beliefs that she had about why this was going on and what it would take for her to change. And it's now 19 months later, and she still hasn't done it once. And we made this shift and turnaround in a very, very quick amount of time. So the idea that it's going to take a long time and it's going to be a difficult process and I don't have the ability to do it, these are just memes. Almost everything that we look at in our life is memes. Virtually everything about religion is a meme. You know,
what finally turned her around, though? I mean, she must have, through your help, of course, but she must have said to herself, I'm tired of the way I've been living.
Yeah, I think that's what probably got her here to Maui. But you know what, George, the thing that turned her around, because I'll never forget it, she just looked up and realized that the idea that she couldn't change was no longer something that she could validate. It wasn't true. I kept saying to her, can you be 100% certain that it's going to be impossible for you to change? And she said, and I said, 100%, that means there's absolutely no possibility that you could change. She said, well, there might be some possibility. I said, so, okay, let that thought in. There is some possibility that you are that you might be able to change. And I said, now what's the reverse of it's going to be very difficult and take a long time? And the reverse of that is it's going to be easy and I can do it. I said, now you can't be 100% certain that it's true with either one of those thoughts. But one of those thoughts is going to give you an opportunity to get to where you would like to be. The other thought guarantees that you'll never be able to do it. Why would you continue to pick on that first thought when the second thought, and you're in charge of whatever thought goes into your mind. And that moment of realization that I have within me the ability to perceive what I have been experiencing, and I see this with addictions, I see this with people who've been overweight, I see it with people who've been poor all of their life, and I see it with people who've been in lousy relationships all of their life. They have got to look at the thought systems, that most of which are not true, that don't support them, and then begin to pick thoughts that may or may not be true, but at least will offer you an opportunity to get where you want to be.
Bruce Lipton, is there a science behind what Wayne is talking about now?
Well, absolutely, because we used to believe everything was like programmed in the machinery of the cells, and so that you talk about, oh, beliefs are locked into the program as a, like physical tapes or something like that. And it turns out it's really, the beliefs are not really locked in the system. They're in the field, and it's hard to explain that, but it's sort of almost to suggest that the human body is somewhat like a television receiver with an antenna, and our identity is out in that field as a broadcast that plays into us. And so the relevance about it is we don't have to physically change the system. We just have to change the field. And the field is generated through thought. So it really turns around that through the quantum physics. And this is the, you know, the most profound thing about quantum physics and the hardest thing for physicists themselves and to accept is that the reality that we live in is not physical material. I mean, we perceive it to be that way, but when you go down inside and look inside the atom, you find there's no real particles like electrons and protons and neutrons. They're energy fields. So basically, everything is energy. And what quantum physicists have acknowledged is, as you mentioned, maybe Wayne mentioned it, is about the fact that that as we perceive the world, the observer creates reality. That was an established fact in 1925 when physics first came into being. You know what happened? It was the rest of the audience that heard this message, all the other scientists, and it was so hard for them to comprehend. They made an arbitrary decision back in 1925, and they said, okay, the principles of quantum physics, they're kind of weird, but they only, let's say they only apply to atoms. So if you want to talk about atoms, you can talk about quantum physics, but you talk about bigger things like the world we live in. They said, well, we just can't bring that into this world, so we'll stick with the old Newtonian idea. The problem is that they had to, you know, arbitrarily not bring in the truth, and that is the observer creates the reality at any level, from the atom to the body to the life that we're living. And it's been demonstrated over and over again, but it's so hard for conventional people in a world of materialism to let go of a fundamental belief that it's matter that's primary, when physics said, no, thought and energy. And if it's that way, then recognize you don't have to change the matter. You just have to change the thought and the energy. The matter will conform to the thought change. And there's a quote by Albert Einstein that just puts this into the most simplistic understanding, and it is, the field is the sole governing agency of the particle. Very simple quote. The field, the invisible energy, is the sole governing agency of matter. The mind is the field. The mind is the sole governing agency of the body.
It's interesting, Bruce. So this is Wayne speaking. If you go into the medical profession, I mean, the implications for that are astounding. But the medical profession, wasn't this one of the reasons why you left teaching in medical school? Because you realized that you were not teaching, you know, a fundamental, you know, physical truth any longer.
No, and it's unfortunate because the reasons I left are now even more prevalent than before, and that is, there's an interference in the medical system and the medical communication by the pharmaceutical industry. And the pharmaceutical industry sells chemical drugs. And therefore, if you often come into a room and then say, you know, you don't need the chemical drugs, you could do it with the energy, of course, they're not going to be the first people on the block to support this. And you may say, well, how come? I mean, we know what's out there. Why isn't it in the field? Why isn't medicine even, you know, handling this? And it's very interesting because the same question and answer applies to, look, aren't there obviously better and more effective ways to create energy than burning fossil fuel? And then you say, well, where are they? And the answer is, it's not in the interest of the fossil fuel industry to promote that. And the same thing applies to, what about healing with thoughts and energy and fields like that? It's not in the interest of the pharmaceutical
industry.
They
won't touch this, Bruce.
Oh, my God. They are totally, they're gassed. They want to get rid of, and this is, Wayne will be able to talk about this because it's so much fun. The pharmaceutical industry wants to find tests to get rid of people who respond to the placebo effect, because they don't want the people in their test to, you know, distort
Absolutely.
The results
right.
of their experiment.
Right. The placebo folks are healing themselves.
Right.
More than the drugs.
Yeah.
Well, they're trying to now get just the APA, American Psychiatric Association, is now attempting to get the disease called shyness. You know, which is typified by the following kinds of symptoms: an unwillingness as a third or fourth or fifth grader to raise your hand in class, to get up and sharpen your pencil, to go to the bathroom. You know, a hanging back when it comes to socializing and so on. And now creating a drug, literally
that,
a drug.
That is now going to be a disease.
Shyness is going to be a disease, and they are creating a drug for it because the pharmaceutical industry basically is not interested in drugs that cure people. They're interested in drugs that keep people on them for the rest of their lives.
That's right. They don't want a cure.
No, it's very interesting because Dean Ornish in San Francisco, cardiovascular surgeon, working with his cardiovascular patients, took a group of them and said, instead of the regular drug treatments like all the other patients get, I'm going to take this one group and give them a better diet and teach them how to meditate and reduce stress, just simple things like
and
that.
And alternative things. Right?
And what basically happened was, all of his patients, not only did their degeneration stop, they actually regenerated their cardiovascular tissue, while the medical group, with taking the drugs, they were thinking success was just stopping the degeneration. Mm-hmm. So what was important was this published work by Ornish never got accepted by the allopathic medical community.
Of course not. They don't want that known.
No, and that's why, and he said, if I got the exact same results with a drug, every doctor in the world would prescribe that drug. And he said, because it was without drugs, they will not talk about it.
Stay with us, both of you. Dr. Wayne Dyer, Dr. Bruce Lipton. Wayne's website and Bruce's both linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. I'll be right back. Boy, if Wayne Dyer and Bruce Lipton were baseball players, we'd be going to the World Series every year. Both of them, next on Coast to Coast AM. Wayne, what did you do to pull yourself up years ago and move in the direction you're now in?
I never really had to do that, George. I came into this world with a different kind of consciousness than, than anybody else. I was, you know, I was blessed to be asked to marry my friend Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm sure you've heard of them.
Yeah.
Last August at their home, and when the wedding was over, her mother stood there and she said to her, "Do you feel any different?" You know, and she said, "I've always felt different," and I feel the same way. I mean, I always knew even when I was a little boy, living and going from one school to the next and one home to the next and so on, that we didn't have to be unhappy. My mother even tells me of. Because my mother had to put us in foster homes and then got us back together again when I was 10 years old. And it wasn't because she didn't love us. It was because my father just walked out and there was a depression and so on. But I learned very early that, you don't have to let things get to you. My mother used to say that we would be all standing for a bus on the east side of Detroit. I would be like 3 years old and a 4 year old and a 5 year old. We had three boys under the age of four. And she said a bus would come by and just splash all of us. We'd go flying down and everybody would be crying. She said, except you. You know, she said you would get up and you'd be laughing and you'd be telling everybody how much fun it was. And you know what? I've done that my entire life. I've had to go through the different struggles that I've gone through. I think that when you come here to have great teachings, you have great challenges as well.
Absolutely.
And so I've gone through addictions, and I've gone through separations and the divorce, and I've gone through medical kinds of things. And I feel like when I go through them and figure out that I can really do something about them, I can then teach it because... I always say I had a conversation with God before I came here, and God said, what do you want to do, you know, in this lifetime? And I said, well, I'd really like to teach self-reliance. And God said, you know, for a whole lifetime, you want to just teach self-reliance? And I said, that's what I'd like to do. And he said, well, we better get your little ass into an orphanage then, you know, and you spend 10 years in there, and then you'll learn to rely upon yourself, and then you will be able to teach it, and no one will ever be able to dissuade you. And I've never looked upon my life as difficult or hard or whatever. It's just I just take what comes along and just deal with it and always go through life sort of bewildered and happy and in awe.
Good for you. I'm going to be in Honolulu in a month or so for our affiliate, KHVH
sure.
AM. And if you're close by, come on by. I'll make sure everybody
that.
Knows.
I'd love to come over. It's only a 20-minute flight. I can be over there in no time.
Oh, that's a I'd love to have you.
Yeah,
there.
Just call me. For sure, I'll be there.
Bruce, with your work, and I know you're working on what you call spontaneous evolution. We'll talk about that next hour. But tell me a little bit about the fact that science, I mean, because you're a well-known cell biologist as well. Is there a science behind this that you see changes in the cell system? And by that, I mean, if somebody is negative, will cells look differently than if someone was positive?
Oh, absolutely. What I found out when I did those cell culture experiments, when genetically identical cells in different dishes and changing the environment, it revealed that the fluids contain information that can adjust the cells and cause them to become different things. And what's really interesting is when I work with my cells in a plastic petri dish, for example, I can take the dish and put it from a good environment to a bad environment, and the cells will absolutely start to get sick and die, and the cultures will start to crash. All you need to do to heal them is just take them out of the bad environment, return it back to the good environment, and they recover again. And what's interesting, people don't realize this, is that we are skin-covered petri dishes, and that we have 50 trillion cells living inside our body, and the culture fluid is the blood. And so when you cut yourself open, it's like opening up the dish and the fluid starts running out. And why that's important is we now recognize that the brain is the chemist that controls the culture medium. And so just as I was changing a culture medium in a culture dish and results in changing the behavior and characters of the cell, our brain, through the action of our mind and our beliefs and our perceptions and attitudes, release chemistry into the blood, just like a pipette in a sense, and changes the culture conditions inside the body and adjusts the cells to fit the mind's perception of what is needed. And so it turns out, yes, there's a very physical mechanism between where a thought is then translated into the chemistry of the blood, which is then translated into the control factors of the genes and behavior of the cells. And therefore, just like skin-covered petri dishes, like I said, the plastic ones, you put them in a bad environment, and it gets sick, and then you take it out of the environment, and the bad environment gets well. What the whole error of our medical profession today is that we allow people to be in a bad environment. They get sick. And rather than saying, listen, you know, if you do something about this environment, you get well, they say, well, just stay in that environment, and we'll give you these chemicals to see if we can balance you in this crazy environment. And it's like, that is like the stupidest idea in the world.
It's amazing.
Go, Wayne.
I'm sorry, Bruce. I just heard this, and I'd like you to comment on it. I just heard this the other day from my friend Christian Northrup. She said that they discovered that people who have multiple personalities, you know, like authentic multiple personalities, like Sybil and so on, living inside of them, that the personalities have different eyeglass prescriptions for the different personalities.
Oh, and I saw that as well. It was interesting. It was a piece on that on HBO. And
think about that. I mean, that's just totally astounding to me.
So many profound changes occur that EEG activity, brain activity, is almost like fingerprinting one individual and another. And they found that when a person shifts their personality, they actually shift their EEG functions and are somebody else. And what's more important is they change their biology instantaneously at the moment they change their belief system. So, and this has been demonstrated over and over again, you can have an allergic response to, say, dogs in personality A. And then the moment you shift into personality B, about a minute or so, you can have dogs crawl all over you, no problem at all. And then you shift back to personality A, and one dog comes in, and you'll have an anaphylactic reaction. And you have to say, no, what does that mean? And the answer is this. The immune system is totally regulated by the personality and the perception. And it's the basis of what we call psychoneuroimmunology, where immunology, of course, immune system. Neuroimmunology means the brain's influence of the immune system. And psychoneuroimmunology is how psychology changes the brain's chemistry, which in turn changes the immune system. And the significance is this. You can turn your immune system on and off with a thought. A positive thought, of course, would help it really be much more effective, but negative thoughts and stressful things and fears can actually create brain chemistry in a matter of seconds that can shut off your immune system. And it's our stresses that, it turns out, are essentially almost the entire cause of the illnesses that we have on this planet.
That's so amazing. I just got some blood work done, and I had a elevated reading on the white blood cell things. It's above what it's supposed to be, and so on. And when I'm looking on the internet and looking at what the causes of, because there's all kinds of possibilities in there with a 15,000 whatever it is on the white blood cell, and the number one cause of elevated white blood cells in people is not. Not the presence of cancer, not the presence of infection, the presence of stress.
I would believe that.
Here's a fact, and we go back to that Dean Ornish thing. This is a fact that's known by science. 90% of cardiovascular disease, 90%, it's actually probably more, is basically only due to lifestyle. And why is that relevant? Because there's not the forthcoming from the profession to say, look, rather than giving you all these drugs, we know that this is the lifestyle that's causing it. Why don't we talk about lifestyle changes? And, of course, you can't make a profit by talking to people if you don't sell them the drugs. So they ignore this fact and then continue to push a drug and saying, just keep that lousy lifestyle and use this drug as a buffer.
It's interesting because what's the life expectancy of the average medical doctor in the United States? It's under 60.
Is it really?
Yeah, 58 something.
And most of them have alcoholism and drug problems just trying to cope with the stresses that they're under.
Now, Bruce, tell me, too, what is epigenetics?
Oh, fabulous. This is the new vision of genetics. We used to say genes were controlling us. I mean, you can still read it today in the papers, and science has known genes haven't controlled us for 20 years. But the media does not let this message out. The media keeps saying, oh, a gene causes this and that. It turns out genes cause nothing. Genes are blueprints. And why that's relevant is the whole concept. Think of this is a false statement. A gene turns on or a gene turns off. It is so false, it's a joke. In this reality, there is no on and off to a gene. A gene is a blueprint. You go to an architect's office and you ask them if a particular blueprint is on or off, and of course they look at you like, what are you talking about? And the reality is genes are blueprints. And what's epigenetics? It is the mechanism of reading and adjusting blueprints that is controlled by the mind. So basically it says, the genes don't control us, but the architect, the mind, the architect, is the one that can select the genes and modify them. And here's a number that's so profound it blows me away every time I say it, and that is using epigenetic modifications of a gene, you can take one gene blueprint and create 30,000 different variations from the same blueprint, meaning there is no limitation on what we can do with our genetics.
None.
Well, it's we can make absolute health, or we can die at the thought of it.
Wayne, let me ask you this. We are faced, bombarded now every day with this economic mess that so many Americans are truly hurt by. I mean, those of us who are still fortunate to be working, you know, we're holding on okay. But those people who have lost their jobs, can't find work, they're in a pretty tough fix. How do you get those folks to get positive again, to move forward?
Well, first of all, I would say they shouldn't think like what you're the way you're describing that situation. I think that's the very first message, which is you're not in a tough fix. I mean, that's, again, it's a thought. You have to ask yourself, is that thought true? That I am in a tough fix. That this is a. I heard a statistic not too long ago that said that the of all of the jobs that exist in 2006, something like 70% of them won't exist in 2010. I mean, it's like, you know, like, so when people lose their jobs, for example, that doesn't mean that if we lose 500,000 jobs this week, that 500,000 people are going to go, you know, jumping out of the window or are going to all be depressed and aren't going to be, you know, they're going to be doing something else, replacing something. I mean, we're sitting here, you know, we talk on cell phones and we have fax machines and we have all of these kinds of things that didn't even exist, you know, just a short time ago when computer industry and all of these kinds of things. So that the first thing you don't want to be telling yourself is that I am in a tough fix and this is horrible and I'm not going to be able to get myself out of it. And then you begin to use your mind in a different way. One of my great teachers was a man named Neville, who died back in the 1970s. And he traveled all over the West, particularly just giving lectures. And he talked about this thing called the power of awareness, that the greatest gift that we all have is the power of our imagination. So in our minds, we have the capacity to be able to create for ourselves whatever it is we would like to be able to create. And then go to that feeling that we have within our body and begin to assume the feeling of this wish fulfilled, and then begin to literally, instead of thinking about the end and how I would like my life to go, in your mind, you always have the capacity in your mind to go to the place where you really want it to be, to think from that place, to begin to feel that. And then the last 4 or 5 minutes of every single night that you're alive here, instead of when you're going off, and Bruce talks a lot about this in his in the biology of belief, is that going into your subconscious mind, you don't want to take the last 5 minutes of the day and review all of the things that are wrong, all of the things you don't like, all of the things that didn't work for you, all of your anger, all of your hurt, all of your pain, and review that, and then slip off into your subconscious mind and then marinate for the next 8 hours in all of the negativity and all the things that are wrong. Because your subconscious mind cannot make a distinction between what it is that you are feeling in your body as a result of what you've imagined or what you are actually experiencing in your life. So you have the ability to take, first and foremost, change the way you look at this entire economic environment. Instead of getting in line and seeing all the pictures of all the people, you know, 5,000 people are applying for a job to sweep up, an old plant or something, look at a different way to make a living. that all of us have a soul and the callings of our soul and something that we need to do and we feel deeply within us that is ours and ours alone and uniquely ours, and yet we've been terrified because we've used all of these excuses to keep ourselves away. We just haven't trained our mind to believe that an economic downturn is an incredible opportunity. I don't care who you are or where you are living. And the people who are in the worst of circumstances are not the ones that should be mad at me for saying this, but are the ones who need to hear this the most and go to work at changing the way they look at that and then go out there and start acting in a totally different way. I have my own radio show that I do every Monday on Hay House Radio, and I am virtually every other call. I'm telling people over and over again, what would your life look like if you couldn't think the thought that this is a terrible situation that you're in? What if you just couldn't think that, you know, and you couldn't read it and you couldn't hear it? What would it feel like if you couldn't think that you're stuck and that this is horrible and that? And they say, well, I'd be free for the first time. I'd have a sense of peace, of inner peace that I've never had before. So that's the first thing that you have to begin to do and recognize that, you know, if you understand the Tao, I've wrote an entire book about applying the wisdom of the Tao Te Ching. You know, everything comes in cycles. It's cyclical. It's up and it's down. And built into all good fortune, said Lao Tzu, is misfortune. And built into all misfortune is good fortune. So become the observer to that rather than identifying with it.
When someone like Dan Carroll lost his hand, then lost most of his fingers on his other hand, what got him, Wayne, to just pick up and make something out of his life?
Because, see, he came here with a dharma. I mean, a dharma is like, you know, I have this film called The Shift, and we talk in there a lot about dharma. And your dharma, it's like everything that comes into this universe from the Tao, from the invisibleness, from God, from Source, from divine mind, whatever you call the place that all things originate from, that everything has a dharma. A spider has a dharma. A cat has a dharma. And so do each and every one of us. The problem is that we lose sight of what we're here for. We take on this thing called an ego, and we start to believe that who I am is what I have and what I do and my reputation, and I'm separate from everybody else and who I'm better than and so on, instead of recognizing our divinity. And Dan Carroll is the kind of a guy who reached down within himself and decided that he was going to make something happen, and I believe it was his connection to God. And I don't think there's any mistake in what happened with Dan. And now, at the age of 29, his book is going to be called Gift of Fire. Gift of Fire. In other words, he thinks of it as a gift, that even though he's been looked at and called a monster his entire life, inside of him there's something that can't be burned, you know, and that's where he lives. And I've spent a lot of time with him. He stayed at my home, and we've had many meals together and many flights together, and he's been on many programs of mine. And this is a man who authentically believes that this all happened exactly the way it was supposed to.
Well, what a great attitude he has.
Absolutely.
It's also, when he's in front of an audience, because I was in an audience with him there, and I have to tell you, everyone in that audience, whatever their issues are in life at that moment, when they see him, they all just realize, they all get lifted, because, my God, if he can do this because of his willpower, everybody can do, you know, this with their willpower, if they want to put it that way.
Well, you speak, Bruce, in your book. I don't know if we have time now. I know we're getting close to the top of the hour, but one of the great stories out of your book that I've used myself, in fact, I used it on my PBS special, is the story of the guys with the knee surgery. I mean, you talk about, you know, the power of the mind to be able to make something happen. I mean, these are people who had fake knee surgery whose knees got better just as well as people who had the actual surgery. And you wouldn't think that would be possible, would you?
I mean, well, it freaked out the surgeon, because he said, everybody knows that what we do is what makes the difference. And then he realized just pretending he did the surgery was all that it took to create the same result as actually doing the surgery.
Next hour, we'll talk about how you can help change your life with Bruce Lipton and Dr. Wayne Dyer. And then in the final hour, phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.